The views and opinions expressed on this podcast are for informational purposes only and solely those of the podcast participants, contributors, and guests, and do not constitute an endorsement by or necessarily represent the views of The Hartford or its affiliates.
You're listening to the Small Biz Ahead podcast, brought to you by The Hartford.
Small Biz Ahead podcast. This is Elizabeth Larkin. I'm the managing editor of smallbizahead.com, which is a website that is completely focused on helping you run your business better.
Yeah, and I do a lot of writing on smallbizahead.com.
Yes. A small business owner, a small business consultant, a small business expert, and he also writes a lot about small businesses and works with them every day.
On Small Biz Ahead. Except we're not talking about small biz today, are we? Aren't we talking about big biz?
We're talking about big business crowding out your small business. That is what our question is about today.
So like Walmart opening down the road from me or some big chain store or something like that. What do I do? Okay. Yeah. All right. I got it.
That and more. And we'll talk more about that after we hear from our sponsor.
This podcast is brought to you by The Hartford. When the unexpected strikes, The Hartford strikes back for over 1 million small business customers with property, liability, and workers' compensation insurance. Check out The Hartford Small Business Insurance at thehartford.com.
Okay, today's question. My small business is at risk of being pushed out of the market by a larger player with more resources. What are my options?
Shut. He's just shut down. All right.
I remember when I was in high school, I was working at CVS and, you know, I was like checking people out and doing this thing that they call facing, which is you bring everything on the shelf to the front of the shelf and make sure it's all like facing the right way and looks really nice. I was like, you know, 15 was like my first job. And they had a meeting. They called a meeting with us one day and they said, Walgreens is going to open up right next door.
First of all, isn't that funny? Like CVS is there and like Walgreens is like, you know what? Let's just open up right next door to CVS. Why do they do that? They do that all around. And the pharmacy store, the drug stores, they make it a habit of doing that. It's because they scout out the location and they know the demographics. They do their research.
Yeah.
And they're like, CVS is selling this. We could be selling just as much. Yeah. Right.
There's this joke. Do you know, Louis Black, he's
sure,
a comedian.
Of course. He has the angry guy.
He has this joke that if you're in a city, like you can be standing on a corner and you'll see a Starbucks. And then if you turn 360,
you'll see another one.
360 degrees, you're guaranteed to see another one. It's the same thing. So they called us in, the manager, and I feel like I'm going to take your thunder a little bit.
No, go ahead.
This is going to be your answer too.
No, go ahead.
The manager called a meeting, and I was 15. I was like, I don't really, like, who cares? Like, Walgreens is opening up.
When you're 15 years old, who cares about anything other than, boys in sports?
Yeah,
go ahead. Right.
So she's like, you know how we're going to differentiate ourselves? Because our prices, I guess CVS's prices, like, were slightly higher than Walgreens.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe it was because she was saying customers who go to Walgreens are super loyal to them.
Right.
So you know how we're going to differentiate ourselves.
She said, we're going to differentiate ourselves by having an amazing mobile app that uses artificial intelligence and bots to make sure that our customers are always in the know and be able to make their lives much more better and productive.
Okay.
She said that to you when you were 15. Am I right?
And this was like the mid-90s, so no.
She was always thinking ahead. She's a very forward-thinking person.
I think she herself was like 17.
See what I mean? She's 2 years older.
We're going to focus on customer service.
Ah, right, customer service.
And Gene, I feel like that's exactly what you would say to your employees as well.
It is. I mean, in the end, that really is important. Look, I mean, first of all, I don't want to sound too negative here, but depending on the business that you're in, if a large company or a large business moves in down the street, there really is reason to consider, I don't want to say completely shutting your business, but one of your options should be maybe moving your business. I mean, location is important in this world. And if you're in retail and you're a merchant, if your location is not as desirable as it was, things change. And if your location isn't desirable as it was when you opened up the business, 15 years ago, maybe this is your sign to say, you know what, let me find a better location that's 10 miles away or something like that where I might have a better shot. I just want to say that, like,
no, you're right.
The world changes. I'm not saying, I'm going to stand and I'm going to fight. Okay, maybe you want to stand and fight. And we'll get to that in a minute with the whole customer service speech. But, you know, I want to say that, like, you know, if you're nimble, right, and you're smart and you want to make money, you might say to yourself, listen, I could stand and fight, but wouldn't it be less expensive for me just to pick up and go to another neighborhood or another place where there isn't the CVS or a Walmart right around the corner? And let me ply my wares there and do our thing. And that might be a better option for you. So you shouldn't close the door on that just because you think you're giving up or whatever.
Failing.
No, it's really being a smart business person. Yeah. I mean, there's no every trading, you're just moving away. People change product lines all the time. People change locations all the time. It's not about failing. It's about being smart. It's about, you know.
And
you
one
know.
Thing I want to point out is we don't know what kind of business this is. Right. This could be an online business that they're like, someone's eating up our.
Very true. I'm going to make the assumption, and you're right, we don't know, but I'll make the assumption that it's some brick and mortar business and it's some shop. And again, the big behemoth, you know, moves in down the street and because that seems to happen so much, and then people freak out about it. And by the way, that you just raised another point. I mean, you know, okay, Walmart moves in down the street, but, you know, does that mean that, you know, without shutting down your store, is there another avenue of revenues like online sales that you might be able to do that maybe Walmart is not doing or not doing as well?
I'll tell you how little stores, smaller stores, can compete with big box stores. Big box stores have not figured out delivery yet. I don't understand why.
Right.
So, like, for instance, I was on the Target website the other night, and I was like, I need some tissues because I'm highly allergic to everything.
Right.
And the only, like, I want tissues now. I'm not going to order tissues and wait 3 days. So I thought, I wonder if Target like delivers, like, will they just deliver me tissues? Like some grocery stores deliver.
Right.
And no, you have to order it. Either you have it shipped to your home.
Right.
Or you got to the store.
Right.
But I won't have it shipped to Target because I did that a couple of years ago at Christmas. I didn't want to like stand in line because it's so crazy around Christmas time. And they ended up canceling my order because they couldn't fulfill it. So, and I actually was listening to a podcast a couple of years ago with some business expert, and she was saying big box stores have not figured out delivery. Mm. So if you run, this is not a good example, but let's say it's a classic example. Let's say you run a hardware store and Home Depot opens up around the block. Home Depot is not going to deliver same day packages, but you can really cheaply. So think about that.
Agreed. It really is. This now gets back to where we started the conversation and the story that you were telling at CVS and that amazingly innovative 17-year-old boss of yours who, as I know, was thinking of the mobile app at the time.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Just didn't share those ideas with you back in 1974 or whenever this was. But I'm just kidding. The customer service part is extremely important. I mean, when people talk about fighting against Amazon even or fighting against, again, any big box brick and mortar retailer, we all know as shoppers ourselves that we're going to go into these stores, the big ones, because we know they're going to have inventory.
They'll have what we need.
They're going to have the pricing is going to be good. We know that. But we also know that the employees are basically useless. Yeah. I mean, they really are. I mean, you can't even ask for, I mean, of course there's exceptions to the rule, but you know, if I go into, into a Walmart and I ask the employees there for some advice on a new TV set, I'm just not really confident that I'm going to get the best advice. And it's no offense. It's just the training from the company isn't that great. Yeah. And they sell too many other products. And by the way, Best Buy is a different situation. Like they actually invest in their employees to do training. I've had good experiences there.
Yeah, my sister-in-law worked there and she went through.
Best Buy's pretty good. It really is.
Expensive training.
If you're a small business though, that is your leg up is your people and your employees. So if you're selling some type of commoditized product that you can get at a Target. Yeah, well, that's part of the customer service. If you're selling like some kind of commoditized product, you can just walk in and get a Target. You're really going to get, you know, you're going to get beaten on that. That's what it is. But if you're selling something that takes, or there's some advice that's needed, if it's fashion related, you know, or if it's technology related, or if it's something food related, something like that, where, you know, where there is some advice that's needed, that's where a smaller proprietor, I think, has a huge leg up on a larger business. Because I am more confident when I go into a shop like that. If I'm going to buy glasses, for example, or if I'm going to buy, you know, I'm going to get advice from, you know, from either a proprietor or the one or two employees there that clearly are, you know, they're there and that's what they do. And they're, you know, they have the potential to give me better advice.
Yeah.
So it is the customer service. And that brings me back to the other point you mentioned is about things like delivery. So like, you know, you can, as a small business, you can respond to your customers way faster. I mean, if you know there's like a delivery issue, you know, like with Target or whatever, okay, Target's got to go through 18 layers of bureaucracy to figure out how to fix that.
Yeah, because they're using a partner to actually do the delivery.
You can just do it tomorrow and start offering, you know, a delivery service. I don't know, hire somebody part-time to do it or figure out whatever your answer is, but you can respond fast to what your customer needs are. So it's really a, now it's funny, we were talking about like pharmacies. There are still quite a few in the neighborhood where I used to live. There was like a little local pharmacy, and down the street from us, there was like a CVS, and the local pharmacy continues to do well. And the reason why it does well, I think there are actually two reasons. One is that the pharmacist, you just, you had a relationship with that pharmacist way more than, I don't know, the person working at CVS. And it's no, I'm not trying to diss on the people working at CVS. They have a lot of great people there, I'm sure. But I don't know, it was like, it was his shop, and, you know, the other pharmacists that work with him were like his people, and you just felt more like, you know, cared for, because and he you know, was able to take advantage of that. He also started a little online business as well, selling like specialty gifts out of the pharmacy, and then also you could order them through like a website, and that also provided another, you know, stream of revenue for him. So,
and this is in Philly?
And yeah, it's actually in a suburb of Philadelphia in Lower Merion, called Babis Pharmacy, B-A-B-I-S Pharmacy. It was excellent. So I guess my point is, let me just kind of sum up, right?
Yep.
Number one, the big box store corporation moves into your area. Oh my God. Oh my God. Number one, you know, give some thought to moving. Okay. Really. I mean, that's what battle is all about. You take a position somewhere else and thrive. Give thought to moving. You're running a business here. This isn't, you know, don't get too emotional about the location. You're running a business. It's your livelihood. So that's number one. Number two is the customer service thing is actually, is that, that you're always going to be your leg up. Number three is look for ways that you can do things definitely better than the big box store down the road, like providing same day delivery that you know customers are going to go to. And finally, just because you're in a retail store doesn't mean that you can't have other streams of revenue coming into your store. So you're changing up your product mix, you know what I mean? Selling something a little bit more specialty or innovative, like the pharmacist that I mentioned at Babis, he sells, you know, sort of specialty gift goods or whatever. Yeah. So still the same pharmacy with the, you know, whatever, but he said, listen, I'm going to just start selling some stuff. I'm getting the foot traffic in here. I'm going to.
Can his prices compete with like a CVS or a Walgreens?
For the most part, but no. I mean, they're going to be that much. Just people are going to buy bulk. They're going to go there.
Yeah.
Which brings us to another thing in mind as well. Listen, you're not going to. There's just always going to be customers who are going to go to CVS and Walgreens. What can I tell you? I mean, you're not fighting for them. You're looking for those customers that appreciate the extra value of service that you provide. And you want to make sure you don't let them go.
I just feel like those small business owners, like they have so much knowledge.
Yes.
I almost want to go around and like just interview all of them.
I know. I totally agree with you. And I find them fascinating. Like even like the owner of this Babis Pharmacy, I'm going on. I don't know the guy. I could recognize the guy on the street. He didn't know me from Adam, but I see him all the time in a store. And it's a second generation store. And I'm sure he's miserable about a bunch of things and happy about a bunch of things. I'd love to interview that guy about, you know, the challenges that he's facing and all the different stories that he has.
Come on.
Bring him in. Bring him in.
Do it.
Bring him in.
Also, just imagine like going to, like there's this hardware store in West Hartford, Connecticut, where I grew up, that it was called Fowl's.
Yep.
And they stayed open well. Now,
yes.
They're now a True Value or something.
Right, right.
They stayed open well after the Home Depot's.
By the way, True Value is just, they're all independent stores. Yeah. They're just, you know, it's True Value is just an association that they're all
belonging
to.
It doesn't say Fowl's on the store anymore. Okay. So I'm thinking maybe.
It's probably made the choice to use the True Value brand.
So anyway, I mean, they like knew our family and like they understood like that my dad was redoing our whole house by hand. And like, you know, you just don't get that at a Home Depot or something. You're going to see a different person every time you go in there.
Agreed. And look, a hardware store does not sell commoditized products, in my opinion. I mean, yes, you can buy that stuff online or buy it from a Target, but you really, most of the time you're going in there, you're looking for advice on how to use these things and what's
and
best to be used.
There are some products that like, I still feel like only hardware stores sell.
Mm.
Like, and of course, I will say their hours are terrible. Hardware stores are open from like 10 a.m. to like 4 p.m. and that's it.
Right, right, right.
Okay, we are going to be right back with Gene's Word of Brilliance.
Did you know that increasing customer retention by as little as 5% can improve your profitability by as much as 75%? If you're looking to increase your customer retention and profits, check out Small Biz Ahead's new ebook, Keep Customers Coming Back for More. This ebook will teach you how you can use the reciprocity principle to increase sales, how to increase social proof to help drive customer interest, and why creating a fear of missing out can encourage customers to buy from you. Head over to smallbizahead.com and click the link in the show notes to download your free copy today.
Gene, hit us with your word of brilliance.
Well, Elizabeth, my word of brilliance this time is pregnancy. Here's the reason why I bring up the word pregnancy.
He's afraid I'm going to cut him off and tell
him. No, not at all. As business owners, our job is to always be looking ahead. We always want to be planning. We always want to make sure that we're avoiding any surprises, because there are a lot of people that rely on us to run our businesses effectively because their livelihoods depend on us. So we are looking ahead. Where's the economy going? You know, there's all sorts of metrics that we can read. And the metrics are, gross domestic product, the growth of the economy, unemployment rates, just trying to figure it out. What does this tell us? Well, a new metric has come out. This was a report done by a university just recently, and this was reported on BBC News. And here's what this report found. The authors of the report tracked 100 million births, miscarriages, and abortions in the United States from 1989 to 2016.
Okay.
And they found that the rate of pregnancies showed whether or not we were going to be heading into a recession or not. In other words, whenever there was a recession, they saw that for several months before, the rates of pregnancies markedly declined. And that was for every single recession.
That is so weird.
Crazy, right? It's almost like the analogy that I give is like that when animals can sense like an earthquake coming.
They run away.
They run away. The report's authors said that even, and by the way, they said they correlated to the depth of the recession, like before the Great Recession of 2008, 2009, the pregnancy rates fell off several months before, like 5-6 months before, even more precipitously than the way they fell off before less impactful recessions.
What do they attribute this to?
So what they attribute it to is that even though they say, well, CEOs and executives like before the recession of that time were saying we're still optimistic or everything is good or whatever, it's the people that are on the ground. It's you and it's me and it's employees at all these companies and whatever that are going to work that they sense. They sense that things aren't going as well. Whatever you're reading in the paper, whatever the boss tells you, they sense. And if you're going to get, pregnant and bring another child into the world, clearly there's financial responsibility. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
And it's almost like it's something biological that's telling these people, you might want to hold off on having babies because, we're heading into a recession. And the data showed for every single recession, pregnancy rates. Now, how do you translate that into the real world? Because we don't know right now, like the rates of recession, the rates of pregnancies. Like, we don't know who's pregnant right now and how that's all correlated. Like, you can't really tell that in advance. But here's how you can tell certain these things in advance. Now the authors are saying we're going to now start studying baby products and infant products and prenatal classes, because if they see that enrollment in these things or if purchases of these kind of products are declining, we start seeing like a decline, that might be a forward indicator that a recession is coming.
What are other forward indicators of recessions?
Ones that most people go like sort of mainstream, like sort of
this one's
like,
definitely the coolest. But.
This is cool. I've got a couple other really cool ones for you. When people ask me how you could tell if a recession is coming, I tell them to check out the Baltic Dry Index.
Oh, we've talked about this before.
A long time ago, we talked about this before. The Baltic Dry Index is an index, a freight index, that tracks the cost of freight through the Baltic Sea, which is one of the most busiest transportation lanes in the world. When that index is going up, that means the cost of freight is going up. If the cost of freight is going up, it means there's more demand for freight, and it's pushing the cost of freight up.
Okay.
When that index is going down and trending down, that's giving you an indicating that the level of shipments is going down as well. And that could potentially be a forecast that a recession is on the way. There's other indexes that you can look at as well, like consumer confidence starting to go down is also a sort of a reliable thing. Alan, oh my God, why am I forgetting the name of the chief of the Fed? Greenspan, Alan Greenspan. His index, and this is documented, you can read this and find it and put it in the show notes. So there's articles. He used to use an index for the men's underwear industry. He used to track men. This is the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Wow. And his theory was that when men start or stop buying underwear, that's a sign that hard economic times are coming. And he would actually look ahead and say he could prove that out, saying, listen, as a guy, Elizabeth, I mean, you know, it's just, you have the underwear. If, you know, you want to cut back a little bit, you just, well, you
You're
turn
like,
them,
I don't need any new underwear.
You turn them inside out. That's usually what works for guys. So there's lots of different indicators. I do tell my clients, follow a couple of good economists so that you can see what metrics that are sort of coming down the line. A lot
Could
of people have
them?
Good ones. I can. At the American Enterprise Institute, there's James Pythakoukalis. Put it in the, I'm not pronouncing his right. Pythakoukalis. And you can put it, look him up. It's P-E-T-H-O-U-L-I-K-I-S. And there's another economist, Mark Perry. Both of them are excellent.
Okay.
Now, two great economists. And then the other place that I would recommend is that there is a great blog called the Calculated Risk Blog. It's one word, Calculated Risk Blog. And if you look at Calculated Risk, it is a it's an economist that writes on all different types of data going through, but he writes it in layman's terms.
Okay.
You can subscribe. They'll send you an email every day with different economic news. It gives you a head up where things are coming.
So do you think that there are a bunch of Wall Street analysts right now looking at like...
Men's underwear?
No.
Yes.
The upcoming birth rate?
Well, right now, they don't have the data to track that. Okay. And by the way, if you're on Wall Street, you're looking for stuff like this, right?
Okay. Yeah.
You don't, it's tough to say. So, but what I think they're most interested in this BBC report and from the study that was done is that if there is some way to correlate the decline in pregnancies to actual dollars, which is why they're most interested in things like the sales of prenatal, equipment or the signups and classes for birthing.
Saying that this is predicting a recession. They're not saying it causes a recession.
No. It's predicting. So, it's almost like people can tell in advance that there's a recession
that's
coming.
That's what I thought you meant. So a couple of years ago, I'm sure you remember this. This is when marketers got into a lot of trouble. So this young woman went to Target and she bought unscented moisturizer.
Okay.
And that triggered her to get a mailing from Target. I can't believe they sent mail, but they did. And it was full of coupons for baby stuff.
Right.
And her dad found it and he didn't know she was pregnant.
I heard that. Yeah, that's terrible.
So that's basically terrible. Saying when people start buying things that are unscented, it usually means they just found out they're pregnant.
See, that's interesting as well. I never knew that. Yeah. So that might be another thing. What I can see is I can see a new index coming out someday. Called the pregnancy index, where somebody puts together a bunch of economic data like unscented products, signups to pregnancy classes, prenatal baby food bought in advance, whatever
diaper sales,
whatever things that might give you an idea of pregnancy rates, and then come with the index. Then if you track that index and if it starts falling, it should be saying like these people are telling us something. There's a recession coming.
And we should all run for the hills.
Run for the hills.
Okay. Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Small Biz Ahead podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. We'd really appreciate it.
Thanks for joining Elizabeth and Jean for another edition of the Small Biz Ahead podcast. For the latest on small business trends straight from the small business experts, visit the Hartford Small Biz Ahead. We've got articles, how-tos, and videos to help you run your business more efficiently. Check us out at smallbizahead.com.